Welcome, everyone, to Uncle Nene's Nerdcast. I'm your host, Nathan Fletcher, a.k.a. Uncle Nene. We've got a great show for you today. This is, of course, the place where sci-fi and fantasy aren't just genres. This is how we process reality. Today's guest is a comedian, a podcaster, wrestling commentator, and an unapologetic fan of time travel, aliens, and starships with better HR departments than most corporations. You may know him from his work with AfterBuzz TV, his podcast Commander's Log, and his take on pop culture that somehow makes you laugh and think. Today we're going to get into it. Star Trek Discovery, Back to the Future, and Men in Black, three touchstones of sci-fi in very different ways. Let's beam him in. Welcome to the show, Flobo Bice.
Well, what's going on, man? The fact that I'm on your show means the world to me, because I mean, there's many uncles out there. There are cool uncles, there's creepy uncles, but the sci-fi uncle is top tier.
Exactly. America's sci-fi uncle. It'd be great if I'm known as that. Well, so let's go ahead and start with Star Trek Discovery. I think, you know, you hosted AfterBuzz, which would kind of like recap Discovery, and co-host a Commander's Log. So yeah. I think it's a great before we get started into my questions, the first one is, how did you discover Star Trek Discovery?
Oh, yeah, that's actually a fantastic question, because when I was a kid, I thought Star Trek was already passing by. I thought it just right. wasn't going to be made for it. I thought, I mean, granted, as a wrestling fan, I think we're even worse, but the Star Trek fandom was known for being very territorial. It's like you just had to know, and if you didn't know, you're a square. And I was okay with being a square. But when I launched my DJ business, I'm a wedding DJ. That is my quote unquote day job, which is ironic because it's nights and weekends. I had a gig out in Italy. An Italian American couple wanted me to DJ their wedding, but I had no money, like at all. I was just going to go for the lost lead of it all and use the content for my own promotional materials. You know, I got called out to go to Italy. It would be kind of great. Right. So I'm in this town, which is called Fiore, which is on the Amalfi Coast. And it's great, but it's November. So there's not many people around there because tourist season's over and I'm out of cash. I have just enough to get the taxi back to the Naples train station, back to the flight. So the last 3 days of my trip in one of the most beautiful countries in the world, I was stuck in my hotel room. I really couldn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
And thankfully, Netflix had the rights to Star Trek outside of the United States. So I was into sci-fi before, but because Paramount wasn't launched there yet, when I opened the app, it's like, you may like this. And I go, well, I got to kill 14 hours today, so let's fire it up. And thankfully, Discovery blew me away.
That is great. That's phenomenal. That's what a great story. Yeah, fortunately, those international rights paid off. Yeah. Okay, so, you know, what first hooked you about Discovery when you discovered it? What kind of, you know, if you had any kind of experience with any other Star Trek, you know, what was like, okay, this is different. I really enjoy this.
Yeah, so to the point, Discovery is my first Star Trek series, but maybe I got the wrong clips growing up, because I had older relatives that were into the classic Trek, or TOS is what they call it now.
Yeah.
And I remember like the cheap like effects, the fighting, the you know, the Gorn and like, you know, the costumes. I was like, that was pretty cheesy. But as somebody grew up with Green Lantern is my favorite superhero. In fact, I think my piggy bank, you can tell in the back here.
Yeah,
way
there it
in
is.
The back is a lantern battery. I loved the military aspect of it, that you sign up to do a sense of duty, and your job is to be a peacekeeping force in the cosmos. And so if you remember the first episode of Discovery, it's an insurrection on one of the ships.
Yep.
And I was like, oh my gosh. It's like, okay, so this is totally that way. I thought it was totally wrong. It's about the stars and people and the Kuvmach, but more importantly, the point of rank. And sometimes it kind of blows up my face, because when someone tells me, who's your favorite captain? I'm like, oh yeah, Lorca. But like, because it was first, but I didn't know what to expect. And I just came in with an open mind. And it was amazing.
That's great. Yeah, that's great. I agree. It started, you know, Star Trek Discovery starts off in a very different place than any other Star Trek series. Or, you know, I was a fan of Star Trek The Next Generation. That's what got me into it. I did like the old movies, but the original series never really spoke to me. So for me, it was The Next Generation. But Star Trek Discovery starts off very different. It's not your typical, here's the cast, this is the captain and the sci-fi officer, science officer and the engineer. It was very different, and I liked that. Yeah. You know, how do you think in season three, Star Trek really kind of took us into the future of the Trek timeline? And how do you think that bold jump affected the legacy of the franchise?
Man, that's a very complex question. I understand why they had to do it. Apparently, there was a lot of old school fans that complained that Michael Burnham was never talked about by Spock 60 years in the past. And like, ah, whatever. So, of course, they had to like put themselves on a blank canvas. And I understood that. And so it's not Star Trek the 5 years before TOS. It's Star Trek Discovery. Show me new worlds. But ultimately, I will say that you will look back on that as a hard split into the content. Yeah, we got to see Pike and we got to see the Discovery thing and we got to play with more of the future politics of Starfleet. But to me, a lot of that gets clouded by some of the weaknesses of the big bads in 3, 4, 5. And call me a hater, but it all went off the rails when Cleveland Booker showed up. I'm just saying. I'm just saying, Gaga has a ship. He's living in this van down by the opening of the bay. It became a love story. So I think that kind of hurts a bit, you know?
That's funny. Yeah, I like it. Yeah, you know, it's funny. You brought a lot of humor into your recaps. You know, were there any episodes or moments in Discovery where you just couldn't resist making fun of it like that, like as making fun of something, like even as a fan, was there something like that where you're like, I got to make fun of this because this is good?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was just so many characters. Like, I like when Gray shows up and is like, yeah, I do nothing but sit in the bay all day. Like, I know. Yeah. How would you give them a storyline?
What do they do? That was hilarious. That's good.
And my co-host, John Weber, he was a comedian too, and he was a professional wrestler. But we had such a good dynamic because he's a swashbuckling guy, and he was the knowledgeable one. But I was totally like the Picard, Belay that order. But I was like totally not knowledgeable. So just like, John, does this happen a lot? And he goes, oh, a lot worse happens in Star Trek. And you're like, oh, yeah. Okay, yeah,
that's fun. That's great. That's great. You know, Star Trek, I try to make this a political free zone, but Star Trek has always been a little political and philosophical, you know, philosophical. Yeah. And it's always been part of what it, you know, if you think of the very concept of, you know, in the humanity's future, we're this utopian society with no problems. That's kind of like Star Trek The Next Generation, right? Everything's fine. The humans have it all figured out. We're good. Yeah. You know, very utopian, no money, everything's wonderful. But, you know, did you feel like Star Trek Discovery stayed true to that kind of political, philosophical DNA?
Absolutely.
No,
absolutely. I don't think it's been more than anything else. And allow me to go on a limb because I'll talk politics for a second. So I grew up in a two-party household. Are you American? Are you American or Canadian? I don't know how that
Yes, works, American. But, yep.
Okay. Bam. So you know how it is. All right. Bam. My dad is like right. He's like super right.
Okay.
He's like down the street around the corner right. He watches news.
Okay.
And my mom is super left, and they found a way to make it work.
Yeah,
sometimes better than not.
Yeah,
but growing up, I was always like, I always equated politics with fighting, so I always opted out, which is still pretty true.
Right.
But I will say this, and now with the rise of social media, because you could find a tribe with everything you believe. I'm left-handed. There's left-handed groups on Facebook, or I can go on X and say, hey, does anyone think that Green Lantern can beat up Superman? You do! And then you can like, you know, mobilize whatever you want. The one thing I realize now more than ever is I'm a firm opponent in live and let live. Yeah, I was raised a certain way, and maybe, you know, this belief system says this is great or this is not so great, or maybe this thing we do is fine, but someone always deserves a right to do that. And I find myself more often than not appealing to those of the Vulcan race. even though I always tell people if I had a choice to be anything, I'll be a Barzan. But I would say, look, you look at Tuvok, you look at Spock, you look at Michael Burnham. It's like, we're here to observe and report. We're here to be fascinated. I don't understand it, but these people do, and it means the world to them. Let them live. And it doesn't bother me any. I'm not sitting at home, not paying my bills, being like, oh man, those damn Canadians. Like, no, I'm not doing that at all. Yeah. You know, I'm just trying to, you know, go to work, go to school, be safe, and potentially raise kids if I have them. So I think the Vulcans, for anything, has taught me about, like, just though making sure everyone has their own space to exist.
Yeah, I found that that's one of the things I loved about Michael Burnham's character, was even though she wasn't genetically part Vulcan, she kind of adapted that and was raised as that. And I found that fascinating. If you could pitch a spinoff show from Discovery, what concept or character would you run with?
Oh, like I said, I'm a huge Commander Nan fan, and I know she had to leave forever, but like the idea of being so dedicated to your job, but also being of a race where like most atmospheres will kill you. Like that to me was like, what is her story? What's her sense of duty? And I feel like, I know there's something called like the Worf syndrome, because I always make fun of John because John grew up with Worf, but I always like, oh, this guy gets his ass kicked every week. Like, what are we doing? Yeah. But I don't think anyone would get the jump on Commander Nod. So I would say definitely her. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. I love that. Yeah. Yeah. The other thing with Worf, always reminded me was in the first season, it's really funny, of Star Trek TNG, Worf's solution for everything was blow it up. Like that was his one line. It was like, I think we should fire torpedoes. Like that was like every solution for every problem. And then later they let him be a more complex character. But at the beginning, it was like, you know, I was like, oh, what is this? There's got to be more to him than let's blow it up. Like, let's.
I know in DS9 he gets like the fill in, but I know on TNG if I was Picard, and it was like, what happened? Let me guess. It got the drop on you?
Yeah.
Last week it was Klingon measles. Now it's something else. Like, what are we doing?
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's move on to Back to the Future and time travel mythology. You cited Back to the Future as one of the most essential films to study. Mm-hmm. And you've made references to the DeLorean and its impact on modern cinema. You called, it's just one of those must-watch films. I agree completely. What makes it such a kind of perfect movie to study? You know, what really resonated with you?
So I'm a big fan of shooting for the middle brow, right? Because time travel is a very complex issue. If you've seen Interstellar, you don't understand. Right. You can get really in the grains with it. And Christopher Nolan movies aren't the most palatable. You have to fight them. What I liked about Back to the Future, there really was a ticking clock of what you would do for your family, how to protect your own future. So if you don't really care about the science, you can just go, all right, let's go, Marty. But at the same time, when I was a kid, the imagination of what if there was a split timeline? What if I let my bullies win? Will things change? And to this day, I still tell people, get the hell out of my car, old man, because it's one of the most funniest lines in all of cinema, you know? And I played the video games and they were terrible. The Back to the Future ride before it became the Simpsons ride was one of the best times. But to be able to hop in a car, which is very much a boy fantasy, right? Fast and Furious, Steve McQueen, right? You get hop into a car and save the world, man, sign me up.
Yeah. Absolutely. I used to tell my daughters, I have two daughters, and I would tell them when we get in the car, and I'd say, don't worry, girls, where we're going, we don't need roads. And
they'd be like, they're like, not again, Dad. Oh, man. We have kids of our own. You can totally make sure that they embarrass
you. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Do you remember how old were you when you first saw it? You know, curious.
Oh, yeah. So I'm kind of dating myself, but the movie came out the year I was born. So I did not see it in theaters. But yeah. I remember getting, well, in New York, there is that one, every city has a big TV station that just plays old movies. Ours was WPIX, Channel 11, New York's movie station. So the first time I saw it was the edited for your TV.
Okay.
When I was about 8 or 9 years old. But I would say the first time getting the VHSs, I remember those.
Yeah.
I was about 11. It was one of those like extended holidays from school. And I hadn't seen the third one at that time. And the cartoon was already out. on CBS. There was that one season, the Back to the Future cartoon, which kind of redubbed the Huey Lewis the News theme song for the cartoon.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. The voice is different. And so I kind of sat there and it was all day. That was the first time I think I watched like movies all day in my house. Like, you know, chores be damned. I'm going to sit here and get the whole story complete. So I'll say 11 or 12. Yeah.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. I think those movies where you really, when, you know, VHS was such an important thing because it was like a tangible media that you could have, and, you know, you could watch it too many times and wear it out. But it was something that was rare. And so like, you couldn't just watch what you want when you want to watch it nowadays. Like you had to have this thing that you could watch. And I know for me, those were some of those early movies, you know. I had like Raiders of the Lost Ark and, you know, E.T. And man, that was a precious collection.
Oh, yeah. And we were members of both Blockbuster and Hollywood Video because, you know, you buy VHS at retail was like $34 back then, and you had to wait 6 months after the movie came out. It was like a big deal, you know.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Let's see. You once joked about Back to the Future ride. This is great. Yeah, you once joked that the Back to the Future ride at Universal was part of your theme park DNA. What was it about that experience that stayed with you?
Yeah, so I was 12. It was summer of 97. I was 12 years old when I went, and at Universal Studios Florida, you actually go through like the Back to the Future space. Like Doc Brown has his own fried chicken stand and it's like, wow, theming or whatever. But the idea, much like the movie, is what Disney calls Imagineering. The story is that Biff steals one of these things and it's up to you and nobody else online but you to save him by hopping in the spare DeLorean to bump him to cause a time rift or what. It doesn't really matter. You're being 12 years old and the guy from the movie, you know, like just saying Christopher Lloyd, saying Doc Brown, saying, yeah, without you, we're sunk. It was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And it spins around. And of course, it was so intense for my mom. So, you know, it was cool when she's freaking out. You're like, wow, mom's freaking out. This is great. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I think to me, to this day, when it changed over to Simpsons Ride, I understood it back then, but it was just kind of sad, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. What a dream come true that would be for a 12-year-old. Yeah. It's like, I've got to save it. That's great.
Yeah.
There's this cultural reference for Back to the Future. But also a fear of touching it. Like no one wants to make them a remake, you know? Do you think a remake would be good, or do you think leave it, it is, let it stand and don't destroy it? You know, what's your preference?
Well, I got to preface this by saying I'm a film school graduate, so I'm classically trained in cinema. I hate that because there's so many snobs out there. Yeah. But hot take is you have to. You have to do remakes. And I know it's very easy, especially now in the YouTube culture, where to say, oh, Hollywood's out of ideas. But we remake things and make them make sense for the next generation. A DeLorean doesn't make sense to anyone under the age of 25. Like, it was an attainable car that was purposely used for this purpose. Imagine if it was like a Tesla Model X about 10 years ago. You see classic films like The Maltese Falcon or White Heat or The Star Is Born or The Jazz Singer. Those are remakes too. And I sat there in my adult years seeing the Smurfs movie and Garfield being redone. It's because no one was talking about those. So like I said today, in 2 weeks time or 2.5 weeks time, I'm going to be 40 years old. And that movie came out the year I was born. I think it's not going to be the same talking to the next generation, be like, when I was a kid, Back to the Future was great. Because kids don't care what old people think. You know what I mean? They need their own. They need their own Marty McFly. They need their own gimmicks or own twist on things to make sure things are relevant.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes a friend of mine and I will sit and, okay, if we did make this remake, who would be the cast? What would we do? You know, I think it can be fun, especially for movies like Back to the Future, which were so loved by everybody. You know, it was a real kind of community moment to watch that together. And I think it would be great. Yeah. Okay, so I have a question for you. Let's say that Doc Brown shows up and says, you've got one chance to travel to a single moment in sci-fi history.
Oh.
What is your pick and why? A certain moment in sci-fi history.
Yeah, so this is kind of a deep cut, but in the fourth Men in Black movie, Man Might Be International, Which ticked me off, but we'll get to that. The idea is that Tessa Thompson's character sees the Men in Black and avoids getting neuralized, and she like breaks in and they gave her a tryout, which would never happen because the Men in Black will let that happen. But I thought, why not me? If right. I could have been a Man in Black, man, I would totally have changed the course of the history. I mean, it'd be so much better.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, that's great. I like that. So speaking of Men in Black, let's go ahead and get into that. Flobo, you joined the Evolution of Movies podcast to celebrate the 25th anniversary of Men in Black.
Whoa, a deep cut, man. Shout out Uncle Nanny.
I do my research.
Yeah.
what is it about that movie that the first one, and we'll get to the sequels, but what about the first one that just really stands out to you that connected with you?
Speaking about VHSs, I couldn't see that in theaters because my parents are homebodies. So I waited the 6 months to get that VHS for Christmas. And I remember that November, my teachers were like, well, we'll watch Men in Black in class. Like, no, put me in the hallway. I didn't want to get it spoiled.
Right.
Yeah, kids nowadays won't understand that. So about movies and about what can be offered on film, you see comedies all the time. You saw action movies all the time. But Men in Black was the first time I had seen the mix. It was comedy. It was action. It was science fiction. A brother was one of the main heroes. I mean, he wasn't a bad guy there. And when you're 12 years old, to be able, and also I'm from Brooklyn. So even though most of the movie takes place in Queens, excuse me, the idea of being like, oh, wow, this thing is right down the street at the Battery Tunnel station. This could be kind of real and it's not real. And the neuralizer. And back then, Will Smith was cool because he danced in all of his music videos. Yeah. And he was dancing with Mikey the Alien. And so it was all of that. It was the perfect mix of like branding, merchandise, an aesthetic, a color palette. The fact that it was Big Willie Weekend, his second after Independence Day. I was instantly hooked. And when the animated series came out, that was appointment viewing. Like, my homework was done at 4:30 after school every day to watch the Men in Black animated series.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. I think it really did change a lot for the sci-fi, I think, community in the sci-fi world, because it wasn't just like a niche sci-fi movie. It was a big blockbuster movie, and it was like, oh, okay, we can do all these things. We don't have to just be Alien, right? We can do this thing that's kind of fun and lighthearted, and not just for little kids. It was for adults too. It wasn't, it was really something that had broad appeal, and I find that interesting. There's kind of, Will Smith's charisma, of course, is great. Then it's such a perfect contrast for Tommy Lee Jones' dry humor. And it was absolutely, I don't think there's been a other kind of buddy cop personality dynamic that I could think of was as good as that. It's gotta be one of my favorites. What part of it do you think is kind of similar to that, in that it's just such a unique situation and a dynamic that makes it so timeless, really?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because like people talk about in cinema the mid-market movie, like that's disappearing. Either budgets are so small, or the book blockbusters is no really like mid-range. But I think besides that, the buddy cop genre is pretty much all but evaporated. And I'm not sure it's because there's a lack of wattage of A-list stars, and so you want to have either an ensemble or try to prop somebody up. But you think about like Starsky and Hutch, the remake, or Rush Hour, that series, at least the first two, was his heads and tails above what was being offered. Even 21 and 22 Jump Street, which sounds like it's a modern movie, but that's still 10 years ago. You don't really get many of those.
A lot's changed in 10 years.
Lots change. I mean, people are consuming things differently. We don't go to the theater if it's not something that's either going to be spoiled, or if it's a brand of an artist you really, really like and want to support. That's different than being like, it's Friday, let's go to a movie, I think the dynamic of the two work. I do think even though Will Smith is initially synonymous with hip hop, but the idea of playing with a bit of the culture with sci-fi. Now, there are some parallels in black music and artistry. I don't know if you've seen Cosmic Slop. I don't know if you've seen or listened to any of those Little Wayne CDs where he goes to space. Yeah, black people want to go to space. Yeah. That's basically what it is. But the fact that like Will Smith was almost like the on-ramp to that, and it was okay to be like that and not be seen weird. Like Afrofuturism was a real thing. This was kind of like the Disney version of that.
Yeah, that's great. I like that. you know, I have this note here, and I want to know the story of it because I don't know much about it. But you called out the Mets being the punchline in the movie.
Yes.
So
yes.
Are you a Mets fan? Or are you a Mets hater? What's the story here?
Oh, I'm a huge Mets fan, and so a lot of times people have this thing called the LOL Mets, right? And if you look at pop culture, whether it's SNL or Family Guy, it's always, hey, at least we're not the Mets.
And right.
There are worse teams out there. The Marlins are worse. The Rockies are worse. But the fact is, the Mets play in New York. They're not the Yankees. And so you imagine this, an entire alien attack, this like 8-foot tall cockroach is destroying Queens, and the movie finds time to have a dude get plucked on the head by a fly ball. You're like, wait a minute. Come on.
Couldn't you have picked the Yankees for that to happen to? Yeah.
Anybody else?
Oh, that's good. Okay, yeah. Oh man. So on the sequels and the spinoffs, you know, what did any of them recapture or come close to the magic of the first one for you?
The short war answer is the third, because actually they go into the Met Stadium and they say, no, I'm just kidding. That's not the only reason. But the second one had the formula of all the different genres and tried to add romance and just collapsed under its own weight. And I like the aerial scene with the new hotness, the Mercedes, but it was a bit too much. But I'm one for the brand. The third one was flawed, but it kind of made sense. You get the more background of what it means. The fourth one is almost offensively dull. Like, it's not even like good or bad. It's just kind of like, why are we even international? You haven't explained this at all. Like, is that the guy from Taken? What's going on? You know? So I almost never count that. I mean, like 20 minutes ago, I had to think, like, wait, did that happen in the fourth one? So I would say overall, I always say I love it, flaws and all. The first one is the best. The third one tried to make a lot of the second one right. I don't know if you remember that when it was filming that. It was a big controversy because they started filming without finishing the script. And they're like, will it be anything? But that's why I ranked them. 1, 3, 2, because it has a personality. And then 4, because I always forget about it.
That's a good ranking. I'd have to say I agree completely. Yeah. And I liked in 3... I liked Brolin Tommy Lee Jones in our earlier, because it looks like they're related. So it was like perfect, perfect casting for that. I think that's pretty good. Let's imagine you were offered a role in Men in Black reboot. You know, what kind of agent would you be? Cool and collected or chaotic and loud?
Okay, so I'm glad you asked this because I've been thinking about this for the past 25 years. as Agent F, here's a person that really went beyond the code of the Men in Black and had an international or galactic incident, but somehow saved the day due to his silver tongue. But as far as a punishment, because he's so good at his job, is now tasked with being the drill sergeant for the next crop of recruits that happen to be under the age of maturity. So kind of like an intergalactic camp. But then I get to be like a drill sergeant because I'm still going through my own penance of going back to the main ranks.
I can tell.
He's like, you planned that. Like, yes, I did. I did
that because that you did not come up with that on the fly. That was you've thought about that.
Since I was 13, man, that was it. And I was the kid. You know what I mean? I get to be the old man.
Yeah. I always thought with Men in Black International, I always thought it was funny because I always thought of Men in Black as a intergalactic agency. And so now you're going to all of a sudden reduce it down to international. It was just, I never understood the name. It could have just been Men in Black 4. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, you didn't have to.
I'm with you. Because the second one makes it very clear. This is like Earth's like airport. And if you're going to have another one, because different planets can have another one, you don't have to say we're some other other entity at all. Just say, look, you're downtown. But you know what, man? I get it. Someone saw Thor and said, let's put Chris Hemsworth and Thompson together.
I do. Oh, God, I forgot her name. What was her name? The female. She's, what's her name? Yeah, Valkyrie.
Oh, Tessa Thompson? Yeah.
Tessa Thompson. Yeah, She's great in the Thor movies, the Avengers movies. She's amazing.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of some other show she's in. I can't remember what it is. Oh, it's going to bug me. I'll remember it later. All right. So we've covered, 3 of your favorites. I'm going to do a
She was in Creed. That was it. She was also in Creed. You see that movie?
Creed. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to give you quick fire questions and we'll see how this goes. It should be fun. So Kirk or Picard?
Picard. Because I, to this day, I'm in the car, I go, belay that order. I just love saying that. There's no orders being given. Belay it.
That's great. That's great. And just so you know, I'm not lying, my vanity plate on my car is make it so.
Oh, perfect. You know what's up, man. No, Picard makes a lot more sense to me as a captain. Because it's like, I understand the like the 60s and all that stuff. But like, if someone's like totally ignoring the prime directive weekly, that's a problem.
Yeah.
How does he have a job?
He would get fired at some point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for real.
Yeah. All right. So DeLorean or Starfleet shuttle?
Oh, DeLorean. The only way that gets beat if you told me the keys to the NCC 1031. Then I was like, okay, mate.
Yeah.
But
right? Yeah. Okay. Neuralizer or sonic screwdriver?
Oh, man. I'm not a fan of the doctor, man. it has to be a neuralizer, man.
Yeah. Right.
That's another franchise. I'm like, there's no way I could do that franchise. Yeah. Like, how many of them now? 14, 15?
Right. All right. What do you think in the last 10 years, what's the most underrated sci-fi movie?
Wow. Underrated.
Or TV show. I'll open it up a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, underrated, it's kind of hard because like people were kind of rally behind things, right?
Yeah.
It's like, no, Green Lantern did suck. Even though I'm a Green Lantern fan. That was awful. Why is Parallax a cloud? that's a hard one. I have to come back to me on that one. Yeah. I don't have an answer.
All right. No problem.
Underrated.
Well, what's one that's come out in the last 10 years that you just really loved, even if it's not underrated, but just if there's something that's really popped, a movie or TV show that you just fell in love with?
I'm just drawing a blank, man. Maybe I just leave under a rock. I want to get off this call. I'm like, oh, my God. They have to go edit me back in there.
Yeah, no, it's all right. Okay, last question. If you could reboot any sci-fi franchise with yourself as the showrunner, right? So this would be not as the star, but as the showrunner. If there's what sci-fi franchise would you like to be able to reboot and be the showrunner and decide where that show goes?
Homeboys in Outer Space.
Homeboys in Outer Space. I am not familiar with that.
Deep cut. Show. UPN had this comedy that was awful, but it was so hip hop 90s about two brothers that had a space hoopty that traveled different planets. And
are you serious?
It lasted one season. My co-host, John Weber, who was on Commander's Log, was in the pilot, actually.
Really?
And I tell him all the time, like, okay, yeah, you can't make things sound 90s like Hoopty, but like two regular just American dudes in a craft going around and solving crimes, I'm in.
Oh, wow. I've got to check that out. I have to check it out.
It is cringe. It's pretty. I mean, UPN was the cringe network, right?
Like yeah, Fiverr, absolutely.
Shasta McNasty, but.
Yeah. People don't remember WB Network, UPN, and, you know, any of that stuff, but they were around. All right. Around. Well, that's it. Thanks for today's show, man. I really enjoyed the conversation. It's been great. You know, I think. You're awesome. You're very funny. Is there anything you'd like people to check out if they enjoyed this podcast, a website you'd like to tell them about?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm on that Blue Sky and that X over at Flobo Boys, and my weekly blog where I kind of mix comedy and sports and pop culture is called justasandwich.com. Why? Because when you go to a restaurant, they ask you for some fries or a drink, you say no, just a sandwich, and answer your question, everything, everywhere, all at once. That would be a cool the last couple of years. It was amazing. I mean, except for the whole thing with the hot dog fingers, but other than that, it was great.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for coming on the show. For you at home, make sure you subscribe to Uncle Nene's Nerdcast if you haven't. And as I always say, for the love of God, stay nerdy.